At Jared, creating once-in-a-lifetime moments is sort of what we do. And right now, we're offering a special moment of our own. A clearance event with up to 50% off hundreds of pieces of bridal and fashion jewelry. There's never been a better time to show your devotion. So pick up a gift for someone you love, or dare to get something just for you. Just don't wait too long. Moments like this don't last forever. Shop the clearance selection in-store or online at Jared.com and dare to be devoted.
Welcome to the Sheridan Report, brought to you by MyBookie.ag on the Grueling Truth Sports Network. To get up to a $1,000 cash bonus, go to thegruelingtruth.net, click on the MyBookie.ag banner at the top of the page. It'll take you there. Up to $1,000 is 50% bonus, so if you put in $500, you get $250. If you put in $2,000, you get $1,000. I am your host, Mike Goodpaster. Right now, I'd like to welcome from the Sheridan Report, Bobby Sheridan. How you doing, Bobby?
Hey, Mike, good morning, and it's a great Monday morning. We have a big week coming up, and we just came off a big weekend.
Yeah, so we had a great weekend.
Start this week off good.
Even I had a great weekend. Bobby had a great weekend. We all had great weekends, and now I like LeBron James more. So let's go ahead and let's start off with our top pick for tonight, Bobby.
Okay, well, before we get to that, because, it's all about the NBA tonight. We got two twin top plays in there. But I do want to just mention we have a free play in the college. There's only one game tonight in college, and it's from the CBI tournament. And it's an interesting game. I put it on the Twitter, and it's on the website since last night. And it's Brown over Loyola Marymount. And it's very interesting because the line was 4.5, and it's now up to 6.5. And I definitely think it's worth a couple bucks. Basic premise behind this play is that I think Brown's coming off a more impressive first-round win. They beat Alabama-Birmingham 83-78, while Loyola Marymount beat Cal Baptist. Now, granted, that was on the road, but to me, that victory pales in comparison to Brown's. And Brown now travels to Loyola Marymount to play this game, and I would think that's a team getting on a plane that would be coming together and ready to win a ball game out here. So I like Brown tonight plus the 6.5, Mike. And now you're ready to go to the NBA?
I was ready to go to the NBA before you talked about the CBI. But go ahead, Bobby.
Well, it's a free play. And a lot of folks like the college basketball. And I think it's good enough to put on the sheet. So we did it. Okay, NBA. We got two top plays tonight I really like. And, they're coming from slightly different angles, but overall the same angle, and we like the 76ers over the Magic and the Thunder over the Grizzlies. And I think the same angle is fairly obvious. You got two solid playoff teams there that are both wanting to continue or reestablish winning ways. And let's go over the 76ers first. The 76ers are a team that has aspirations to represent the East in the finals of this thing. And I think tonight's game with Orlando gives them an opportunity to win the season series versus the Magic. They're up 2-1 right now. Push back a team that's trying to make the playoffs. Orlando's only a half game back of Miami, or maybe a game. It's one or the other, and they play Miami tomorrow. And Orlando's got a chance tonight to – it's a big ballgame for them. And I think Philadelphia tonight, it's all about not having a two-game losing streak. We're late in the year now, and these solid teams, these top two, three-level teams, they don't like to have back-to-back losing streak, back-to-back losses. And to me, a very good team off of a loss is when they're their most dangerous. And they're in that situation tonight, and they're going to want to go down to Orlando and take care of this game. And they've got their big hoss ready to go. He's a top five player. And J.J. Redick alluded to that in his comments, going into this game, just what a luxury it is to have someone like him, because he's playing at an MVP level. And so is Jimmy Butler playing well. He scored more than 20 points in his first fifth consecutive game. And that loss to Atlanta was a head-scratcher. It was, you know, it came out of nowhere. A lot of turnovers in the fourth quarter and sloppy play. And I think they'll clean that up tonight and play a really good game. So I like Philadelphia. You only have to lay, Mike, that line's down to 1.5 now. So that's, you know, in essence, a pick 'em, you know, pretty much. And you lay the 1.5, and I think they'll beat Orlando tonight.
All right, Bobby.
The other game.
Yeah, go ahead. Thunder Grizzly.
Yeah, the other game, Mike. Yeah, the other game is Oklahoma City. And, you know, they're playing Memphis tonight. And that line did jump up. It's now -7. So it is a bit of a significant line. But that line boost doesn't scare me too much because, you know, 5.5. But when I'm laying 5.5 on the road, I'm looking for a double-digit win. I'm looking for a game that's put away, you know, at some point in the fourth quarter, you know, early on. And that's what I think we'll have tonight. You know, Oklahoma City is going to try to do what I said before, and to borrow a tennis term. They're going to try to consolidate a really nice win they had the other night at Toronto. They beat Toronto on the road the other night, and they've had a really tough schedule here to end the year. Them and Indiana, very, very tough schedules down the stretch here. And Oklahoma City, you know, that was a big win as they're kind of falling back in the pack. You know, they're not in danger of missing the playoffs. But as you know, Mike, we've talked about the Western standings. You know, pretty much now Houston's comfortable. So 4 through 8 is kind of interchangeable. And you're still trying to stay away, I think, from Golden State and then for sure from having to go to Denver with them having an overfront advantage. So I think 6-5 would be your preferred spots. 4, of course, for the home court. So Oklahoma City's got a chance to still do that, and they're going to try to consolidate that win they had the other night. And they're going to go play a team, Memphis, who's been a bit of a solid underdog. You know, they played some good ball the second half with some of their young players, but they've got some injury issues, and I think they're limping to the finish line in this last 8-10 games. And I think this is a game that Oklahoma City will get and get fairly comfortably. They get Schroeder back tonight. Their guard, you know, Westbrook is back. They've got some tougher games coming up. This is a game that they're not going to just go to Memphis and just throw away. They're going to get this win tonight. And key injury for Memphis is Hakeem Noah. He'll be out tonight. That's a big loss for them as he was playing pretty solidly. And one note is Mike Conley is going to become the all-time leading scorer again for the Grizzlies tonight. He needs 7 points to repass Marc Gasol. So that'll be a little note. That'll be a side note and a loss for them, Mike. And we're going to go with the Thunder. So we got two playoff favorites tonight on the road, both mentally ready to go win ball games. So that's where we're going with our top plays for the evening.
All right, Bobby. On this day today, we're going to talk a little bit about the 1967 NCAA championship game, Dayton and UCLA. We got some Dayton Flyers stories coming back. We're going to have a special guest, Steve Risley, who will come on and talk a little bit about Don Donaher. And all that and more right after this.
Hi, I'm Mike Goodpasser from the Grueling Crew Sports Network, and I'm here with just one simple message. If you're watching the games, it's time to start making money. The Grueling Truth has recently partnered with MyBookie.ag, an industry-leading sportsbook website, who reminds you that where you bet is just as important as who you're betting on. And that's why The Grueling Truth urges you to check out MyBookie.ag. In addition to the usual thousands of odds, money lines, proposition bets, and futures offered on MyBookie.ag daily, they also have in-game live betting and a mobile site that makes wagering on the go easier than ever. So join now and MyBookie will give you up to a free $1,000 cash bonus on your first deposit. Just enter promo code TGT50, that's TGT50, to take advantage of this offer. You can also go to thegruelingtruth.net, click the banner at the top of the page for MyBookie.ag, and also get the same benefit and the same $1,000 free cash bonus on your first deposit.
Yeah,
so visit MyBookie.ag, courtesy of The Grueling Truth, and enjoy winning today. MyBookie.ag. You play, you win, you get paid.
All right, we're back on the Sheridan Report, brought to you by MyBookie.ag. Remember, go to thegruelingtruth.net, click on the MyBookie.ag banner at the top of the page. I'm Mike Goodpasser, sitting here with Bobby Sheridan, and now a special guest, who knows a little bit about the University of Dayton. 1981, he was on the team that beat Maryland in the second round of the NCAA tournament, their first game when they were a 3 seed and Maryland was a 6 seed. Help me welcome to the show, Steve Risley. How you doing, Steve?
Hey, I'm doing great today, Mike. Thanks for having me on. Bobby, good to hear from you.
Hey, Steve, great to have you on. And Mike says you've got some good info here to lend to our little on-this-day discussion today.
Yeah, he's got some Don Donaher info, and we will get to that here in a minute. But I'm going to go ahead. I was in Dayton for the first 4 last week, talked to some people from Dayton, know a little backstory here, and I'll tell you why the University of Dayton was important to me on a personal level in a minute, too. But the 66-67 Dayton team was ranked, I believe it was 13th at the start of the season in the UPI poll. They kind of bounced in and out of the polls. 2 of their 5 losses, they were 21-5, was to a powerful Louisville team that at the time that they beat Dayton were ranked 2nd and 3rd. The best player on this team was Don May, who averaged 22.2 points per game with 16.7 rebounds. They pulled an upset first round. They beat Western Kentucky 69-67 in overtime. They overcame a 10-point halftime deficit. May played all 45 minutes. I think he scored like 26 points, 20 rebounds. Next, they beat Tennessee, who was ranked 8th. Tennessee's best player, I think, was Tom Boerwinkel at the time. And the Flyers won that game at the buzzer by a point. And the significant thing there for talking to people was May had a really bad game, only 9 points, 14 rebounds in the Mid-East Regional Final. They squeaked by Virginia Tech. They beat them in overtime. And the Hokies led 62-52 with only like 3 minutes left, and that was when there was no shot clock. And they go on to the Final Four. And in the Final Four, they played a really powerful North Carolina team. And Don May played maybe the greatest game he'd ever played. He dominated defenders Larry Miller, who was a second-team All-American, and Rusty Clark. He hit 13 straight field goals, made 16 of 22 attempts, finished with 34 points, 15 rebounds, and they ended up winning 76-62. They then went on to take on UCLA, and that game was 8-4 after 7 minutes, but 4 minutes later, it's 20-4. Dayton was never really in the game. When you look at the final score, it shows 79-64, but John Wooden took his starters out when it was 76-47, so Dayton made it look a little closer. But the thing that was interesting here to me was when you talk about the first four, it is significant that this Dayton team is why the first four is there. Because Dayton played in a basketball gym that seated like 5,000 up until this time. And they had tried to get an arena for years and could not get the public support. And there's also a story I was told by a guy that was there in the mid-60s where Al McGuire brought Marquette there to play. And after the game, he walks up to Donaher and says, "Hey, we're never playing in a gym again." He said, "So our contract's done because we only play in arenas because our program's getting huge." So they make the Final Four run. The Final Four run was the impetus to build UD Arena because UD Arena actually in 1969 was up and ready to go, and now you've got the first four there. The Dayton crowds have always been great, and the thing I remember, I could tie this into Steve Risley, and this is the thing. Steve, I always make jokes about you guys losing in 1977 to Aurora, but in 1978, Aurora played a guy. You ever hear of George Morrison, Steve?
Yeah, I'm sure I will after you tell me the story.
Probably
the
not,
right
Steve.
Off the top of my head.
But
yeah.
That's what makes
yeah,
the story interesting.
Not, yeah.
But in 1978, exactly. When Aurora goes to the state tournament in the sectionals, in the first round sectional game, they played Lawrenceburg. Aurora and Lawrenceburg are cities that are right next to each other. Actually, I was born in Aurora, and I live in Lawrenceburg now. And I remember that was the first sectional game I ever went to. I went with my parents, and George Morrison played for Lawrenceburg. He was going to Dayton. And he was like 6'8", 6'9", and he really wasn't that good. But he was going to Dayton because I think he was like 6'8", or 6'9". So it wasn't like – I don't think George is in the Indiana High School Basketball Hall of Fame, put it like that, Steve. So when you look at it, He got beat by Tim Johnson also. And I think Johnson dropped like 25 on him in that game. They went on to win the sectional. But the reason I tell this story is George Morrison played 4 years at Dayton. And living where I live, close to Cincinnati, about an hour from Dayton, you could pick up all the University of Dayton games on Channel 7 if your antenna was right. We used to watch it all the time because there was a kid from Lawrenceburg that played there. But we get to like 1982. I was like 7th or 8th grade. And our substitute teacher shows up, and it's George Morrison. And George, who had graduated from Dayton, I think, in 1981 or 82, this was his sub-teaching job. And we come in, and he stands in front of us, and he says, "I'm George Morrison. I played college basketball for the Dayton Flyers." And then George proceeds to sit at a table that's in the gym with pieces of paper. And he starts signing his name and handing them out to each one of us. Now, most of these kids don't even know who the hell he is. I know who he is. And he walks over and he tries to hand me this paper. And I'm like, "Why do I want your autograph, sir?" Because I was respectful. But I was also an asshole because I still, even back then, whatever came to my mind is what came out of my mouth. And I said, "I really don't want this paper." And he looked at me and he said, "Don't you know who I am? I'm George Morrison." I looked at George and I said, "Yeah, I know who you are because I watch all these Dayton games and I don't think you've ever played more than 3 minutes in a game in your life. So I really don't want your autograph." And he sent me to the office. And my principal was Mr. Heller. And he was big on giving swats. He had this big ass paddle with big holes cut in it. And he'd give you swats. And he sits in there and he says, "Why were you disrespectful to Mr. Morrison?" I said, "I wasn't. He tried to give me an autograph and I didn't want it." And he goes, "Well, why didn't you want it?" I said, "Because he wasn't really any good." And Mr. Heller laughed and he said, "Ah, just sit in here for the rest of the class. He won't be back after today anyways because he's trying to give all the kids autographs." But... I always liked Dayton. I liked the uniforms. I liked UD Arena. The place was usually packed. And Don Donaher was always one of my favorite coaches. And I know that Steve, you know, got to be, you know, hit. Bob Knight and Don Donaher were really good friends. And Steve, you kind of want to take it from there?
I mean, Don Donaher was one of the three guys that, you know, we talk about Hank Iba. And you know, I think I never really got to interact with Hank Iba. I think he was dead before I got there, but Knight always spoke of him and his philosophies. And then you had Pete Newell, which I know you guys did a show on Pete Newell. And I actually played golf with his son out here in California now. And we tell stories all the time about how much Newell and Knight were together. And then Donaher was another guy. And I think he actually, Mike, if I'm not wrong, he was still athletic director at Dayton when he would come over and work with us.
He was still the head coach at Dayton.
Was he head coach in 81?
Don Donaher coached the 1984 team with Roosevelt Chapman that went to the final Elite Eight and lost to Georgetown.
But he was a coach who was very much built like Bob Knight without the theatric, let's say. I mean, he was a much more reserved person, but still very functional on fundamentals of the game. And, you know, simplicity of the game and just doing one or two things great rather than multiple things good. And I think that's why Knight liked him. You know, Donaher was an Army man, too. I mean, he spent time in the military, so that set well with Knight. And my recollection of Donaher was just he was a calming force to Knight, but the same mentality and practice and things when we worked with him and things like that. And he would have the same philosophies of Knight, but would deliver the information in a little different way, which, you know, Knight was never really good at learning how people wanted to receive information. He just wanted to deliver information how he wanted to deliver it. Donaher, but Knight was smart about that. And he would come in and bring guys like Don Donaher in, who he tremendously respected. And Don would just say the same thing, but saying in the way that was a little easier to absorb and process. So, but he was frequently at our practices off and on, coming over for a couple of days, working with us. And of course, you know, Dayton, Ohio State, that's where Knight played and everything, close relationship there. But yeah, Knight was always brilliant about surrounding himself with people as smart or not smarter than him. And that's one of the things that made Knight such a great coach. And Don Donaher, certainly, and Pete Newell were at the top of that list.
Yeah, and I think with Donaher, he's the perfect example of when you talk about great coaches, he didn't win an NCAA championship, but he was a great coach. I think he won close to 500 games at Dayton. And Dayton was a program
437.
Dayton was a program that he put on the map. And I think that we talked about how the NIT was more important back in the day. I'm not sure, but I think in like 68 or 69, it was either the year after the Final Four or 2 years after the Final Four, he actually took that Dayton team and won the NIT.
Next year, yeah.
The next year?
Okay. Yeah, they finished runner-up in 66-67 to UCLA. The next year they went and won the NIT. And you're right. That's when the NIT was the legitimate tournament because you're only putting, what?
Well, you only put conference champions in then. There was times there where UCLA would be number one ranked, would go win the NCAA championship, and I think there was 1 or 2 years there where USC was like ranked second in the country and didn't even get to go to the tournament because they couldn't beat out UCLA for, at the time, the Pac-8 championship.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah, and the great thing about Donaher was his loyalty to Dayton. I mean, basically, he played there. He coached there. He AD'd, he was an athletic director there for a long period of time. And loyalty was something that's always been very important to, like, Coach Knight. And I think that's why he was such a fan of Donaher's, was that Donaher never really left Dayton. I mean, he went there. He played his high school ball in Ohio. In Toledo. He played his high school ball in Toledo. And so he never left the state. He went to Dayton and never left Dayton. And that's the thing that Knight loved. And Pete Newell was kind of the same way out here. You know, I think Pete was out here in the West Coast most of the time. Donaher was just a really – what my recollection of him is, because we didn't have him a lot. I mean, you know, he had work to do in his own right. But any chance Knight could get to bring him back into Indiana and work with us and talk to us, he was always there. And I think, actually, as a reward, I think Knight actually – made him an assistant coach on the 84 Olympic team, didn't he?
He was.
And got him a gold medal. As a payback, yeah. And that's the loyalty back to Knight for all the work that he did with his teams.
Yeah, that and the fact that Donaher was one of the best coaches in the country, so why wouldn't you want him on the staff? And
no doubt.
I mean, because he built that Dayton program from basically nothing to, I think – he was in a tournament like every year his first decade there. Then it kind of dropped off. I think in the mid-70s, I think they made it to a regional semifinal. And then really nothing again until Roosevelt Chapman in 1984. And that Roosevelt Chapman team in 84 had to win their conference tournament to get to the tournament. And then they upset Oklahoma and Wayman Tisdale, because Roosevelt Chapman dropped like 45 points on Tisdale. And we're both Pacer fans, Steve. We know how good Wayman Tisdale was. I think they upset LSU.
Yeah.
And then they beat that Washington Husky team in the Sweet 16 with Detlef Schrempf and Christian Velp. And then they went to the Elite Eight, and Georgetown was just too much for them. But Georgetown that year in 1984 was too much for everybody as they won the national championship. But, yeah, anytime we could talk about a guy like Don Donaher, I mean, he's a guy that built a program at Dayton, and you get the first four now because of him. I'm pretty sure he was inducted some point along the way in the college basketball or the National Basketball Hall of Fame.
I think 2015, yeah. Was it? 2015, okay. He was in the Hall of Fame, yeah.
One of the greatest coaches that ever lived. And when we talk about the greatest coaches, everybody always wants to say, well, did he win anything? There's a lot of guys at small colleges that have never won anything, that are just as great as guys like John Wooden and Bobby Knight. It's just they choose to stay where they are because they're happy, kind of like Mark Few. You know, Mark Few, even if he never wins a national championship, what he's done at Gonzaga is just as good as what anybody else has done anywhere. When you think about that program, before Few was there, I think they maybe made an NIT with John Stockton. But outside of that, there was nothing. So I think guys like that I mean, a lot of cases, maybe better coaches than the guys we look up to, like Mike Krzyzewski and Bob Knight, because it's a lot easier to win at Indiana and Duke when you're Krzyzewski and Knight. Those are programs that had a history when they got there, and Donaher was a man that built the history of a program, and there's a lot to be said for that.
Well, would it almost be fair to say, Bobby, both you guys, fair to say that kind of Donaher kind of brought the mid-majors into the forefront? I mean, because, you know, really Dayton is a mid-major. They're always going to be a mid-major. But the success he had there, because, I mean, about half the time he was there, they were playing in a tournament postseason. You know, they were in something. They were always invited to play.
Well, Steve, if you remember, I think he was the first one to get a team like that to a Final Four. But you also had schools like Jacksonville, where they had Artis Gilmore. Yeah, if you look at UCLA's tournament run, you got all kind of Memphis's, Providence with Ernie DeGregorio, who went to the Final Four. Providence, no longer a mid-major, but they were a mid-major when Ernie DeGregorio was there taking them to the Final Four. So there was a lot of teams like that. Western Kentucky was really good back then. But what you had is
how about
you had
San Francisco, Mike?
San Francisco, I think, was a major program in the 50s and 60s.
Okay. At that point.
And really, were a major program up until the early 80s, because if you look, they got good seeds up through the late 70s, early 80s. Bill Cartwright, the old Bowl Center and Nick Center, he was there. But really, I can't remember what the scandal was, but there was some scandal that damn near killed that program. It may have even been on the death penalty for a few years in the mid-80s. Because of things that were done in the 70s, because they were wanting to keep up with the UCLAs and the USCs and whoever else out west was good back then. So I think San Francisco has turned into a mid-major, but they turned themselves into that because of what they did. But it's hard to call a team mid-major that has Bill Russell, that goes to as many NCAA tournaments. And back then, you could see teams like Jacksonville make it to the national championship game, or St. Bonaventure with Bob Lanier, because you only had conference champions get in. So if there's only 24 teams, you don't have to pull three or four upsets to make it to a national championship or to a national semifinal. You only need to win two games, and that's a lot easier to do than it is today, where you have to win four. And if you get thrown in a first four like VCU did a few years ago, hell, you got to win five games to get to the Final Four.
And where would you rank Mike or Bobby, either one? Again, I'm just asking general questions that anybody wants to answer. Kind of like a Don Haskins to a Don Donaher, because really Haskins kind of took Texas Western, kind of did the same thing down there. It took a what you would call a really mid-major program at best, and rebuilt it and built it, you know, into a national champion.
Well, you know, Haskins had the advantage of this. I mean, most teams would not play black players, and if they did, we talked about this yesterday with the six or a couple days ago with the 63 Loyola team, who on Survive and Advance tomorrow, we have Fred Mitchell, who's the foremost authoritative person on that team. But Loyola Chicago was a mid-major that won a national championship because they weren't afraid to play the black players. Texas Western, Don Haskins built that program because he went after the best players he could find, which happened to be black guys. And you were playing Kentucky, who had nothing but white guys. You were playing a lot of teams. Mississippi State, nothing but white guys. So they basically...
And Adolph Rupp. And coaching against Adolph Rupp. He's coaching against Adolph Rupp.
Yeah, he coached against Rupp. He was the Kentucky coach then. So it was easier to do because they did it in a way other people weren't willing to do. Where Don Donaher basically built a program and sustained it. With Don Haskins, UTEP was good periodically. You know, they had, Tim Hardaway that was on that team? The team that lost to Indiana in the 92 second round at UTEP. They had some good teams at UTEP. But kind of like Donaher, it was kind of spotty at their first 6 or 7 years. But, yeah, I think guys like Haskins and Donaher really get undersold because there's no national championship. But then again, they get them. Well, Haskins has a national championship, but for the 30 years he coached after that, there was nothing. And those guys get overlooked, but it's a hell of a lot harder to go to Dayton. Put it like this. It's harder for Don Donaher to go to Dayton and go to the NCAA championship game. That's harder than Bobby Knight winning three at IU.
Oh, agreed entirely.
So That's what makes me wonder a lot of times what we judge coaches by. Because John Beilein, even if he never wins a national championship, if he continues to do what he does at a high rate, how can he not be a great coach? And you've said it before, Steve. You played in a tournament. A lot of it's luck. In 81, people get upset. You get there. And that's right. Happened probably mm-hmm. in the last 30 years. We probably had 15 or 20 champions at least that got there just because somebody else got hurt. If you look at the Mateen Cleaves team at Michigan State, they weren't the number one ranked team that year when they won it all. The number one ranked team was Kenyon Martin in Cincinnati. Kenyon Martin goes down, and I think it was the Conference USA championship game, doesn't even get to play in the tournament. They get eliminated in the first or second round right there. That's luck on the side of Michigan State, and it's luck against Cincinnati. So I think if you have a team, it's just like we talked about Izzo the other day. Izzo hasn't won a national championship in a while, and he's only won, what, one or two overall?
One. Seven Final Fours and one national championship.
Yeah, and Mike Krzyzewski, perfect example. If you look at Duke, 1986, they lost in the championship game. In 87, they lost in a regional semifinal to Indiana. In 1988, they lost in the Final Four. 1989, they lost in the Final Four. 1990, they lost in the championship game. And going into 91, another reason outside of just how good UNLV was, nobody gave him a chance, is because the prevailing opinion was Mike Krzyzewski was not a good enough tournament coach to win that national championship game because he'd failed in like four out of five Final Fours before that. And I think a lot of times people don't understand that just to get to that point, you have to be a hell of a one-and-done coach just to make it to a Final Four.
Yeah, and of course, this is a great example this weekend. Boy, that tip at the buzzer with UCF.
Yeah, that's
that
luck.
That thing was 50-50. That's luck that it doesn't go in. That's nothing more, because that was a great play, and it's nothing more than dumb luck for Duke that ball didn't go in the bucket.
Hey, and you know what? That's bad luck for Virginia Tech, because Virginia Tech would have had an open route to at least the Elite Eight, and then maybe the Final Four. And then once you get to the Final Four, hell, you never know. Maybe a Michigan or a Florida State beats off or knocks off Gonzaga. Or almost said beats off. That wouldn't have been good. But they pull an upset, and the next thing you know, Virginia Tech is the highest seed on that side. So
yeah. Exactly,
all right.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to wrap this up because I got a chiropractor's appointment. So one more, Steve.
I have one more question. For both you guys, Wooden, Knight, Dean Smith, Don Donaher, Pete Newell, all those guys were focused on just simply doing the fundamentals. Do coaches overthink things today? Do they over scheme, try and create too much offense, try and create too many defensive schemes? And you look at these guys who we all think are great coaches, and we know what Wooden's issues are off the court, but on the court, he's basically a fundamental coach. Knight, Smith, Donaher, and there's probably more I'm missing out. But is it still just all about the fundamentals?
Yeah, and it was back then, and most guys were out-scheming themselves in the 70s too. That's why guys that kept it simple won. If you look at it, I mean, Bill Belichick keeps it simple. He has a very simple offense that is so simple that each week he can put in an entirely different game plan for the team he's playing. That's keeping it simple to me because everybody knows the terminology. Bob Knight, you knew what he was going to do. He was going to play man defense. He was going to run a motion offense, and that was it. And the thing is this, the fewer things you do, the better you do them. Where when you're spread out trying to run a bunch of different things, I think it just only hurts you in the end.
I mean, Dean Smith in the four-corner offense.
Go ahead, Bobby.
Dean Smith in the four-corner offense. Go ahead, Bobby.
Oh, yeah, I just remember a story, you know, listening to Bob Knight, you know, on all the documentaries I've watched and interviews. I mean, I just have watched them all on YouTube. And I remember him saying that, you know, late in the game, it's a real close ball game. And he remembers looking down the other end of the floor and seeing the other coach fumbling around trying to decide what defense he's trying to get his team into. And he says he thinks to himself about that time, well, we're in pretty good shape. because,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
that wasn't what they were about. They knew what they were going to do the next position down on defense. They knew what how they were going to handle things. There was no guessing. The players knew, and they played man-to-man as good as anybody, and that was his philosophy.
All right, guys.
Well, my comment on that, and I'll wrap it up here, is that for that situation, having been in that situation, Knight at that point in time was coaching players to do what we had done on practice. The other team's trying to coach the game.
And you know the other thing about doing things the same way year after year is this. When you got juniors and seniors, and I'm sure you experienced this, those guys can coach also.
Oh, yeah. No, we were talking to the younger players. Yeah, we were always out there talking to the younger players. Like, hey, just be smart. Stay in the passing lane. Do what you got to do. We got you covered. We've got you covered. If it gets by you, we know what to do. We know where to be, and we'll go. So, anyway, I know you got to wrap it up.
Yep.
We can do a whole show on this.
Good stuff, Steve. Thank you for coming on, Steve.
Yeah.
All right.
No problem, Bobby. Thank you for having
me. Make sure we check out the Sheridan Report at Sheridan Report or to SheridanReport.com. After you go to Bobby, you could buy a daily sheet from him to Sheridan Report for $10 or for a month, $50. You could take that, go to thegruelytruth.net, click on the mybookie.ag banner, top of the page, and you get back to $1,000 cash back, 50% of what you put in. So if you put in a grand, you get 500. Put in 2 grand, you get an extra grand. So make sure you check us out there. Tomorrow, Steve Risley and I will have Fred Mitchell, the author of the definitive book of Loyola Basketball. We'll talk a little 1963 Jerry Harkness, a little 1986 with Al Frederick Hughes, which I'm probably the only person outside of Al Frederick Hughes that remembers that, but I really like that team. And last year's Final Four team of Porter Moser, we'll go talk about that. So make sure you check us out then. All right, we're going to wrap it up, guys. So remember, you can hear all of our shows on iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, Spreaker, Stitcher. Wherever you find sports podcasts, you'll find the grueling truth. So for Steve Risley, Bobby Sheridan, I'm Mike Goodpaster. You've been listening to The Grueling Truth, where the legends speak.
Northern Kentucky University students in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics majors are changing the world. Want to learn more about how NKU helps students face the future and dare to make a difference in the lives of others? Visit nku.edu/STEM to learn more.
At Jared, creating once-in-a-lifetime moments is sort of what we do. And right now, we're offering a special moment of our own. A clearance event with up to 50% off hundreds of pieces of bridal and fashion jewelry. There's never been a better time to show your devotion. So pick up a gift for someone you love, or dare to get something just for you. Just don't wait too long. Moments like this don't last forever. Shop the clearance selection in-store or online at jared.com, and dare to be devoted.